The leader must deal with various group variables as he exercises leadership over the group. Some of the major group variables which relate to the work of the leader are group size, the attitude of group members, and the nature of the group's task. Among the minor variables relative to group work are the background of the members, the lifespan of the group, and whether participation is required or voluntary on the part of the members. The point here is that the leader, whether emerging from the group, elected by the group, or appointed by a higher authority, must constantly take into account these variables, which to a great extent condition the results of group activity. The nature of the group largely determines the type of leader needed to lead that group. Groups are rarely static, but rather possess changing needs and interests to which a leader must constantly be sensitive. Two phases or levels of group growth have been identified through leadership studies. These have been especially emphasized by Dr. Kenneth Gangle. One is the centric group. Centricity marks a group at its more immature or infancy stage. The individuals in the group are more concerned about their own needs and goals than those of the group. Group attractiveness may have been somewhat high, but group effectiveness is very low because members of the group are not pulling together. In such a group, there's often an incompatibility not only among the members, but also at times expressed toward the leader. There is a general resistance to authority, a lack of uniformity, and a minimum of personal freedom. A domineering leader is sometimes necessary for a group like this, at least until the group itself can pressure the individual out of his preoccupation with personal needs and goals. The second type of group is identified by Dr. Gangle as the radic group. Radicity marks a group as concerned with more than just its own group activities. Such a group exhibits a conscious altruism and receptive teamwork which are actually contagious to new members coming into the group. There's some conformity in behavior in a radic group, but certainly not ideation. Selfishness may be surrendered to the achievement of group goals, but individuality is not sacrificed on the altar of collectiveness. A group progresses from centricity to radicity through careful leadership, which takes the emphasis off of force and authoritarianism and extends the limits of freedom as the group is able to effectively use that freedom. Sometimes self-inspection on the part of the group and evaluation of its motives and objectives are valid procedures. As we evaluate all of this information, we arrive at a definition of leadership that we will use for this course. Leadership is the discovery and disclosure of group goals, together with the delegation of authority and responsibility to proper group members, and the direction of group activity by an individual who has the ability to guide the group to the accomplishment of the task. Notice the various aspects of application that can be drawn from this definition. Number one, leadership involves the discovery of group goals. Many times a group is uncertain about its goals. Therefore, the leader must find out what this group is to be doing. Why does this group exist? Number two, leadership involves the disclosure of group goals to the group. This disclosure should be provable with logical, reasonable evidence so that the group will be convinced. Number three, leadership involves the delegation of responsibility and authority to the proper members of the group. This means that the leader must know the various tasks which need to be done in accomplishing the goal, and he must also know the group well enough so as to understand what persons will be suited for what jobs. Leadership is a shared function, or a series of shared functions, any of which may well be performed by various members of the group. And then the leader must motivate others to action. This is our group. This is what needs to be done. How can we best do it together? Thus, in delegation, the leader is seeking to develop leadership in others. The leader actually becomes a leader builder. He helps those under him to grow big because he realizes that the more big individuals an organization has, the stronger it will become. And then number four, leadership involves direction. The leader is constantly guiding the group, keeping the group on course. Number five, leadership involves the ability to lead, to cause others to follow. The final test of a leader is whether or not anyone is following. An individual would have to have a follower before he could be considered a leader. Leadership involves an influence process whereby intentional influences are exerted over others. It has been said that leadership can be considered either in a broad or a restrictive and narrow way. The comparison and contrast could be presented perhaps in this way. You could, on a sheet of paper, put a T-chart with a left-hand column and a right-hand column. The left-hand column, you could put the broad definition or distinctives of leadership, and the right-hand column, you could put the narrow distinctives of leadership. We would compare them in this way. Your left-hand column, the broad definition or comparison. Number one, a person who influences group members. And then the narrow understanding as responding to that, a person who exerts the most influence on group members. And then back to the left-hand column, the broad comparison of leadership, a person who influences a group in any manner. But then the narrow understanding of leadership, a person who systematically influences group behavior to attain group goals. Number three, again, your left-hand column, the broad view of leadership says it's a person who influences group members to comply with his request either willingly or unwillingly. But then the narrow concept of leadership, a person who influences the enthusiastic support of group members in carrying out his request. This comparison between the broad and the narrow view certainly shows that there are many ways that a person can approach an understanding of leadership. Sometimes the question is asked, is there a difference between being a manager and being a leader? Well, some say it's possible to be a manager and not a leader, or a leader and not a manager. Some say that management is actually a subunit of leadership, while others say that leadership is a subunit of management. Now it is obvious that a person can be a leader without being a manager, and a person can be a manager without leading. No one has ever proposed that management and leadership are the same, but the amount of overlap in this area is where there is agreement or disagreement. Bennis and Nannis, in their excellent book entitled Leaders, stated that managers are people who do things right, and leaders are people who do the right thing. Managers are concerned about how things get done. Leaders are concerned with what the things mean to people. The essential difference seems to be that leaders influence commitment, whereas managers merely carry out position responsibility and exercise authority. Let me share with you the following from Don Martin's book entitled Team Think. Consider carefully what is said and then see if you can state any differences that might exist between leadership and management. Don Martin wrote, consider this message published in the Wall Street Journal by the United Technologies Corporation, Hartford, Connecticut. People don't want to be managed, they want to be led. Whoever heard of a world manager? World leader, yes. Educational leader, political leader, scout leader, community leader, labor leader, business leader, they lead. They don't manage. The carrot always wins over the stick. Ask your horse. You can lead your horse to water, but you can't manage him to drink. If you want to manage somebody, manage yourself. Do that well, and you'll be ready to stop managing and start leading. Not everyone can be good at both leading and managing. Some people have the capacity to become excellent managers, but not strong leaders. There are subtle yet apparent differences between a manager and a leader. For example, number one, a manager administers. A leader innovates. Number two, a manager maintains. A leader develops. Number three, a manager plans. A leader sets a direction. Now, this is not to say that managers cannot be strong. The real goal is to combine strong management with strong leadership. According to John P. Cotter, professor of organized behavior at Harvard Business School, most U.S. corporations today are overmanaged and underled. However, with careful selection, nurturing, and encouragement, dozens of people can play important leadership roles in a business organization. Danny Cox, in his book Leadership When the Heat's On, wrote this, "Managers are people who have been given the assignment to lead others, but lack the skills of motivation to do so. Any effort to become a leader moves you one step further away from a management role and closer to a true leadership role. However, top management can't appoint leaders any more than leaders can appoint themselves. In the end, it will be those who subscribe to your leadership that grant you the honor. Otherwise, you will simply be managing. People can manage well without ever breaking through to the ranks of effective leadership." Kuzes and Posner wrote this, "The difference between managers and leaders is the difference between day and night. The former honor stability, control through systems and procedures, and see passion and involvement as words not fit to pass adult lips. Leaders thrive on change. Exercise control by means of a worthy and inspiring vision of what might be. This vision is arrived at jointly with their people. And they understand that empowering people by expanding their authority rather than standardizing them by shrinking their authority is the only course to sustained relevance and vitality." They also wrote this, "Leadership begins where management ends, where the system of rewards and punishments, control and scrutiny, give way to innovation, individual character, and the courage of convictions." One of the questions before we consider some of the various leadership studies would be this, how can leadership effectiveness be measured? In other words, what makes an effective leader? The answer to this question is not as simple as it might seem. This question, as with the definition of leadership, can be approached in several ways. Perhaps one common element in the answer would be the situation into which the individual is called to lead. A person might be effective in one situation and with one group, but not effective in another situation or with another group. Therefore, certain effectiveness principles should be considered. These could be mentioned as follows. Number one, effectiveness is determined by the outcome expected. Was the individual able to lead the group to the realization of their desired goals? Such things as group performance, group survival, group growth, the ability to deal with problems, group satisfaction, and group commitment would come into play here. Number two, effectiveness has to do with how well the group performs its task and attains its goals. In some situations, there are objective measures available to determine attainments in this area. The business community, for example, you might look at profits and sales. Number three, effectiveness is indicated by the attitude of the followers toward the leader. How well does the leader satisfy their needs and expectations? Do the followers respect and like the leader? Are the followers committed to carry out the request of the leader? And then number four, effectiveness is seen in the leader's ability to add to the quality of group processes as seen by the group or by outside observers. Does the leader enhance group cohesiveness, cooperation, problem-solving, decision-making, resolution of conflict, the ability to deal with change, or even the ability to handle a crisis? We mentioned a few moments ago Don Martin's book. He lists the following things that he feels a leader should do in being effective. Number one, a leader has vision. He must develop a mental image of where he wants the organization to go. Number two, a leader has scope. This means having an expansive outlook, seeing the big picture. Number three, a leader is innovative. He's willing to try new ideas and approaches. Number four, a leader is focused. He identifies his major objectives and is not diverted by minor ones. Number five, a leader is a decision maker. There are decisions that must be made, and the leader cannot be afraid to make them. Number six, a leader must remain rational. A leader who has a quick temper or is erratic in his management style will make his employees nervous and upset. Number seven, a leader must be able to handle pressure. This involves both internal pressure and external pressure. Number eight, a leader must be trustworthy. The leader sets up an atmosphere of communication and trust. It becomes a tradition. Number nine, a leader demonstrates a sense of humor. It helps the leader survive. Number 10, a leader teaches. He is the guide. He is the sharer of information. Number 11, a leader encourages involvement. The leader encourages participative management. This allows employees at all levels to express ideas. The leader will listen and ask for opinions. Number 12, a leader demonstrates the conviction of his principles. His convictions will not be altered. Kuzes and Posner have listed the following as characteristics of effective leadership. They have entitled these as the 10 commandments of leadership. Number one, leaders search for opportunities by confronting and challenging the status quo. Number two, leaders learn from their mistakes and successes by experimenting and taking risks. Number three, leaders envision the future and imagine ideal scenarios. Number four, leaders enlist others by attracting people to common purposes. Number five, leaders foster collaboration and enable people to work together. Number six, leaders strengthen others by sharing power and information. Number seven, leaders set the example in that they lead by doing. Number eight, leaders recognize contributions by linking rewards with performance. Number nine, leaders celebrate accomplishments. And number 10, leaders care and make a difference. This brings us to the end of number 1.